Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Andrea,
what?
Two things. Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks.
Last week, our beautiful co-host Andrea did another lap around the sun.
One,
is that what they say?
Yeah, and I went and I sat in the sun for 9 days before it happened. So I have
I've
got some nice color on my body.
You do have some nice. You do. You look good. It's like just sun kissed. You don't look like you burned.
No,
you know?
I did not burn, which was actually kind of amazing considering there were two specific occasions. I went to three. Good Lord. I went to Costa Rica. You guys, here's the deal. It's really hot. It's really hot in Costa Rica. Like midday is like no joke. Like you're just between like 11 and 3. It's so hot and humid and but it was great. It was still very nice. And I saw monkeys and anteaters and capybaras and iguanas and dolphins. And I swam in a school of sardines.
That I'd be so delicious. To me, that sounds so delicious.
That's everybody's like to just like grab one and just like pop it right in your mouth. They move pretty quick, you know? But
they're shiny, they're pretty.
Yeah, it was good. And I ate enough nachos at the hotel bar next door that I have for the first time in my life said, I'm okay on nachos for a bit.
Yeah. And that's a hard one to turn down, you know? That's a hard one. I feel ya. Well, guys, welcome to Sidework Podcast. I'm your host, Brooke Van Poplin.
Hi, guys. I'm your other host, Andrea Wallace.
Oh, man. We're back in. We've got a fun two-parter today, although we may not, you know, we might do part one now and then give you part two.
Yeah, whatever today's we feel part like one of part two. Part two is going to come into a theater near you, you know?
Coming soon. Do want to put it out there if you're down with this. I'm going to drop it on social all around, just in general. Okay. In the height of the pandemic, 3 years ago, when we were all broke.
4 years ago.
But really, in the shit. I see.
But I mean, I know. I just meant more like the feels that we're on the anniversary of like when it started 4 years ago. It's been a whole high school, basically.
It really has. It's been a whole growth spurt. I've lost the first half of my 40s to a fucking pandemic. Anyways, let's not dwell too much on that. But 3 years ago, when pandemic was still kicking, we were all still broke. Restaurants were very uncertain. We created merch, t-shirts. Clearly, we were also trying to have money-making avenues as well. But I wanted to gently put it out there that we have these beautiful t-shirts that just say established in 86. Mm-hmm. It's very subtle. They're very cute.
They're very soft. Tees. They're very cozy.
They're really nice. And they're a really nice unisex fit where you can wear it kind of loose or if you want a little stretch and show off your beautiful boobies and whatever. They look really good. And I just wanted to put it out there. I'd love to check in again and see if y'all wanted one and let you know that it would directly benefit us mm-hmm. for sure to mm-hmm. make a little money back off these because we paid for them with that stimmy money back then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe everyone's doing a little bit better right now. And I'm just going to put it out there. $23 flat will be get you the t-shirt and shipping. So feel free.
Nice.
To hit up the IG.
Do we have any posters left or the posters gone?
We've got a bunch of posters too. And posters. Those are either 10 or 15. And, you know, maybe we'll
could
just
do like a package deal. We could do like, wait, it's weird because the shipping's weird because one's a tube and one's like not a tube, right?
I could, no,
a
but
bundle
I could
price?
I could easily use the cylindrical. No. I got square boxes to ship the posters so I could fully also line it with a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. I just can't do it the other way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we could do a bundle. You want a poster and a t-shirt? We'll make a deal. Mm. All right. Anyways, just reminding y'all that we have this beautiful merch that I just feel we put it out at a time and a place when a lot of you are hurting. Maybe you're doing a little bit better now.
Yeah.
And I'm hurting. So let's move some t-shirts.
Oh,
speaking of everything hurt.
Yes.
Let's get into some headlines. Oh, what do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. So this is not anything necessarily new
yeah.
or something that I haven't seen before, but it's becoming more common because restaurants are constantly looking for ways to make up all the lost revenue from inflation, mm-hmm. Just less people going out to eat right now. But the normalization of like anywhere from $25 or $50 ahead mm-hmm. to make your reservation, mm-hmm. You know, party of six, that's $150 to make a reservation, which then if you don't cancel within a 12-hour window for some places or even 24 hours, they fucking keep that deposit, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. They sure do. But here's the thing.
And I have mixed feelings, right?
Yeah. A lot of it in this article from CBS News, you know, it's like, it depends on, is it a weekend? Is it a restaurant where the tables are like, is it a hot restaurant to get into? You know, I think they want to hold people accountable because we've all been there on a busy Saturday night where we have an eight top that doesn't show up and that was going to make our whole night. Right?
Oh, 1,000%. And there's a chance that maybe like a few walk-ins will sort of make up
hopefully,
for it.
Hopefully, but it will know? Make your night wonky. You hope there's enough spillover. You can just pull that, disassemble that huge table.
Man, that it's a sad feeling when you take apart the big top.
Yeah, it really is. It really, really is. And like, then all of a sudden you get quadruple sat. You know what I mean? That
right,
also
right.
will happen.
For two tops.
I mean, I work in an industry where if you don't show up, you get charged because time is money, you know? I mean, obviously shit happens. I think that there are exceptions to every rule. I'm sure if it's a no call, no show, fuck you, we're taking the money. You know what I mean? If you get in a car accident, I get it. If you're sick, great. And I know a lot of people get really bent out of shape. At least people I know who have been like, if one person doesn't show up, they're going to charge us $25. And I was like, they're not.
No,
if the majority of the party shows up, no one's going to charge you anything, you know?
No. It's if basically the entirety of you mm-hmm. ghost your reservation, then yeah, you all owe, you know, whoever put down their, you know, deposit, you all owe them 25 fucking bucks.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a place they're talking about in downtown Manhattan, Teresi Bar and Restaurant that requires $50 per person deposit upon making a reservation, but they give you 12 hours to cancel. I mean, that's pretty good.
Right. Right. And, you know, for me, my situation with my old restaurant is it was specifically for the seated, plated, pre-fee.
Oh, sure. That makes tons. Yeah.
Special holiday dinners mm-hmm. because it just goes a little different. You need to know what to prepare because it's a weird, specific type of meal. It's not like a normal night of service. Mm-hmm. And it was just a flat $100 cancellation fee, you know, because of the nature of the holiday and you are doing seatings instead of you know, letting the restaurant flow as it will. There was a 6 o'clock, an 8 o'clock, and a 10 o'clock seating.
It's just,
you know, and so
you gotta make your money for the night. You know, you gotta be able to crunch those numbers. And labor is the majority of the cost for most restaurants these days, where it didn't used to be, but labor is number one. And even saying that, like, hotels are doing this too. Now, like, I get, like, after a certain amount of time, if you, like, cancel within 24 hours, that, like, you don't get a deposit back or some of it. Airbnb will do this right away to you. Like, there's Airbnbs that'll be like, if you cancel 6 months in advance, you're only getting half your money back, because, like, these places are in, like, such demand. Like, that's wild.
I don't do those.
No.
I don't believe in them.
And that's how I feel about the hotels. I'm like, unless I like know for a fact I'm going to be staying at this place and love it, like, sure, I'll book there. But other than that, like, I'm not going to like waste my time by playing by your big rules. You know what I mean? Like, especially when there's a very reasonable amount of time, you know, that you give them to cancel. But no call, no show.
Some people
different.
Yeah. Those sound like places that are run from afar by somebody. I don't know what the, you know, because like if you're a personal homeowner of an Airbnb, there's just going to hopefully be more wiggle room. Anyways, but just that's been reported more so as restaurants keep coming up with ways to basically, you know, keep a profit.
Keep their bottom
margin,
line. Yeah.
Keep their bottom line. And, you know, I have to be honest, like, because I put on the doc, Atlanta, Georgia Waffle House workers are just did a 4-day walk off the job to strike because they reached out to corporate. They're like, we need a 24-hour security guard, because 24-hour diners, when people come in drunk, it gets wild.
Oh, my God, yes.
And it shouldn't. I mean, it's well known that, like, Waffle House employees will, like, step off the grill, come get into a fist fight, come back, and then
finish. Keep making your omelet.
Exactly. And that's crazy, because that their job does not need to be Roadhouse, you know?
Yeah.
They've got a job. They also are demanding $25 an hour, which I freaking love, because the paid minimum wage for fast food in general, any big corporation, is about to go to $20.
In California.
Country. No.
California.
In
California.
I'll have to look if it's only California.
It's California. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. As of now, I believe it was April 1st. So next week.
And I'm not talking about restaurants. I'm talking about corporate.
Fast
like
food.
If you work at McDonald's. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and you know, and they want $25 an hour, and they are also saying, like, stop taking our meal money off of our, like, because if I opt not to eat at the restaurant that day, like, you're still charging me out of my paycheck for a meal that you suppose I've taken. And they're like, and I should be fed for free, or else if I don't eat it, how dare you take my money? Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's crazy, because when you think about how rich the owners of these corporations are, and how everyone is now going to cry and be such an a-hole to the workers who are like, I deserve a living wage of $20 an hour, which even when you do the math, it's not that much fucking
It really
money.
Isn't. And like to
it isn't.
To bring this up, I mean, this is like, I love that we're just like rolling into other headlines, even though, you know, so it is California, and it is, we did kind of cover a little bit of this before, but there was a first wave of layoffs that happened in fast food to prepare for this
Pizza
hike.
Hut.
It's going from,
Pizza Hut got rid of all of its
going
drivers.
From 16 to 20. So it's a $4 an hour raise. And while things are happening over, you know, across the country, we've talked about Chicago, they're bringing it in like a little by little by little. But there are definitely, as of just this last week, thousands of more people have been laid off in anticipation to it.
And it's just so that, and like, I'm not, and even though they're doing the layoffs, right, the money is still going to come back to be reflected in the price that us poor consumers have to take on, instead of these fucks at the top getting rid of one of their jets. And this is the world we live in. And I have just been getting increasingly more pissed that the world at large is so brainwashed by corporate greed, imperialism, all of this shit we do, where we're going to be like, that's crazy that a fast food employee thinks they deserve $20. Like, when I'm saying it's not that much money, what I'm saying is it's still not that much money that this person earns.
Right. Oh, no,
right?
No, no, no,
and,
no, no, no.
Yeah.
Especially considering, like, cost of living in this state, in this city, and the cost going to the grocery store is not fun. Going, you know, we talk about these things. It's depressing how expensive.
And for anyone who says that,
yeah,
yeah, I challenge you to live on $20 an hour, because it's never someone who's, you know, struggling to make ends meet who's like, these fuckers don't, you know, these burger flippers. It's like, no, they deserve that and more. Mm-hmm. And also it's yes. And then passing the price off to the customer makes me infuriated, yeah, because it's about keeping the 1% the 1%.
And
so
while
fuck these systems.
It's not just fast food workers, you know, it's the, right. It's all labor in like restaurant labor, yeah, will be 20. And so we're going to see over the next, I don't know, 6 months, even into the end of the year, it's going to be a really interesting temperature to see who makes it and who doesn't make it. It's shitty and it's sad. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the people I talk to who own businesses, specifically restaurants and bars in California, are just like, this is not the time to open. You just need to like hang on tight and hope that we make it, you know? And these are people that like pay decent wages, that care, yeah, so much for their employees, you know? So it's going to be, it's going to be interesting.
I'm just, yeah, we're seeing a lot of what we established collapse. And I'm hoping that for as hard and bumpy as it is, what it does is hopefully usher in a new era. But yeah, I am also afraid we're right at the point of robots taking literally everyone's jobs.
I mean, meanwhile, the Francis Scott Key Bridge got like completely demolished, and like that's a huge shipping hub. So like that's like where a lot of stuff comes into the country. So that's also going to raise prices on so many other things too. I don't know, man. These are crazy.
Well, we can. You know what? There are no server submitted stories today.
Yeah, we're just really going for it.
We're just riffing. So we can just, you know, jump off right here to tell you about our guest who is on the show today. And it's an old friend of mine who's had a really fun, and I kind of feel like similar weirdo trajectories like we have, bouncing all over the place, job to job, restaurant to restaurant, a lot of different interests. And basically kind of a, like tetrising together a really fun, cool life. And it has landed him now at the point of going from a dishwasher to a chef to now being a food truck owner and operator. But he's going to kind of reinvent the wheel even with that. And it's going to be a 2-part episode. So let's listen right now to part one with Chef John Fuller, who he likes to go by Chef John the Dishwasher.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Guys, everyone, we're so excited. Our topic of the day today features not only a great chef in the Detroit area who just opened a food truck, but it's an old high school classmate and friend of mine. Please welcome to the podcast, Chef John Fuller.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great, actually.
Are you off today?
I'm off every day. I don't have a job. That's the cool thing about this food truck thing.
Right.
I retired from the restaurant industry in November. Started making
proclamations. I saw your countdown. Yes.
Yeah, that was a very real thing.
Congratulations.
I spent my last official year in the restaurant business was 2023. But it was 2022, New Year's Eve, actually, that I made the proclamation to a dear friend who since passed, but also the owner of the last place that I worked at, that I think that after 27 hard years in the restaurant business, that this was going to be my last New Year's Eve working, like, oh, for the man. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I do. Yeah.
And then somehow, some way, I stuck to it. Like, it was one of those things that you say when you're like in the heat of it, right? Like, you got 37 different things. So my station had like 39 menu items, and I had a New Year's Eve at a pizzeria slash catering spot. Everything's firing. And I'm like, and this is going to be the last time I do this. I'm retired. And I think I was on my phone, like, making proclamations. Like,
hell
done.
Yeah. It's so roll nice.
A little scroll. Then,
when you're just like, oh, right. Boundaries are real. Like, mm-hmm. I'm done.
And you're talking to somebody that never had any mm-hmm. in anything. And so it was like, I'm setting them. And it started off as like, oh, how do you work Instagram stories? You mean I can update this from time to time? And like every day, I'm like, 265 days till retirement. Da 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 da. And it just kept kind of going. And they talk about manifestation. It happened.
It's amazing. It really it's real. Did. That's amazing.
We manifested this podcast out of nothing. And you know, we've been at it now for like 4 full years completed, going into our 5th year of doing it. And
it's been
it
was that just long, huh?
Yeah, we took our first break ever way back, like, you know, last October, and we all needed it. I actually finally had a job for a bit and what have you, but it took a minute to manifest the energy to get it going again, because we were mm-hmm. super right. out of the loop and whatever. But well, let's get into, you know, we'll get into the trajectory. So since you just successfully retired, you know, from someone else's kitchen, right? So let's throw it back to us in Rochester, Michigan, as teens who in Rochester, where I've spoken about this place many times on the pod, and probably you and I are really similar, where you're looking for counterculture or just any culture anywhere in Rochester. And I saw that you too used to run off to like Royal Oak, or, you know, I would go to shows in Detroit all the time. And
I was part of that counterculture. You know what I'm saying? Like, one of like 40 black kids for one thing. And then on top of that, I decided that I wanted to like have blonde hair and get pierced and tattooed and ride a skateboard. You know, so there's all that.
I dare to call you alternative.
That's what they called it back then.
They did. Indie kind of was there too, you know.
You know, I make fun of like the kids now because they think it's like Lil Wayne and like Little Uzi Vert. But they're like, I was like, nah, this was back in the day when we said that was like a real thing. You could get like I got threatened with suspension.
Did you ever wear colored contacts?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm having some. You were
straight, like gray. Like I looked.
Ooh.
There's pictures floating around. That was interesting.
Man, sure. I bet you haunted those halls. I bet everybody was like, who's that?
I can remember 10th grade kind of biology doing, you know, I remember that, but 11th grade, it was like me, Lane, and Garrett, orange lockers, posted up. Garrett had a huge afro. My boy Lane, he was so weird. He was the best though.
Lane,
Lane Redding, right?
Oh yeah.
Slick back hair, shaved head on the sides, ponytail, you know, rat tail, and then we'd just be sitting there, backpacks on, big Janko jeans. All the way with it.
You were definitely ahead of me because I fully turned into that girl the minute I went into college. Instead of getting like slutty and sorority, I was like, sure, I'm going to let the freak flag fly. And just fully chopped off all my hair, went with the piercing, really baggy jeans, really questionable hair colors. And I just leaned into it. I think because some of my friends were just like, so, I don't know. I was transitioning into that because the end of high school, I was more dressing. Andrea and I are very similar. Mm-hmm. We were dressing like from the Goodwill, and like I was fully wearing like velour.
Oh,
like suits,
dude, like
and bell bottoms,
polyester, and like polyester butterfly collar disco shirts were like everything to me.
Yeah,
with so, big so that was baggy my grungy pants.
You know, I was the fashion. It was crazy. You know what? Okay, so there was a store in Rochester, and what's crazy is I'm still like really tight with all the guys that ran the store. So there was the Hickner brothers, right? So there was Brian Hickner who started this store. On the, I think it was first in Maine, Excess.
Oh yeah, Excess.
Right, and actually, if you look on in the Falcon yearbook, I think it's our junior year. It's got to be our junior. Maybe it's our senior year, but whatever. It was the second most popular store underneath Abercrombie. So whatever that tells you about Rochester, right? And so like incense and concert T-shirts, and you know. Skateboard sticker, band stickers, all that stuff. And then it morphed into like a skate shop next door. And it was called Sporto. And then they sold like snowboards, skateboards. And then a tattoo shop opened in the back of that. And it became Excess Tattoo. And then that transformed into a whole thing. And this is, I can't remember the year that that shop started, but I know I Mid-90s. Started hanging out there. Right. I hung out there for clear into my 20s. And so, and all those guys were older, already like out. They all went to Rochester. I think Brian graduated in 89. Kevin graduated in like 91. Oh, so they had a house in Royal Oak. So I was 16 years old, working at the shop, hanging out. One of the two. It was like the lines were blurred, right? But I go hang out in Royal Oak with the 19-year-old.
Sure.
Right? So that was, you know what I mean? I think of that now, like, they're kids too. You know what I'm saying?
But oh, yeah. They were definitely kids, too.
They might as well have been 40. You know what I'm saying? So that's where all that came in. I'm talking about Royal Oak before it was this Royal Oak, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There was, like, coffee shop. I think the coffee shop was, like, Brazil. There was, like, a teen club called the Black Cat.
Yeah, and, like, they had, like, like a sex toy store, which was, like a fetish and sex toy store right on the main drag.
Noir
which
Leather.
Which I can't think of. Noir Leather, yes!
That's amazing.
Yes.
So yeah, that being said, we both were obviously looking for, you know, and for me, like college was a miss. I never, you know, I was there on campus forever, but I ended up dropping out and working in restaurants. But I want to get into the origin story of you being a dishwasher in the Great Oaks Mall famed restaurant, Foxy's.
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly how that like transpired, but I this is about how it happened. And I'll leave some names out. So it's like one of those things where I was always a little bit younger than everybody, right? So I think there's only like three people in our class that it was like me, Larissa, and Angeline were the youngest in our class. So everybody was 16 and we're 15 still. So, and that was just what was happening. And my buddy at the time got this job being a dishwasher at Foxy's. And he could just do stuff I couldn't because he had a $75 paycheck. You know what I mean?
Right.
$75 when you're 15, that's like
it's a lot of CDs.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, and right. A lot of CDs. And so I don't know how it was that I ended up able to get that job because I was clearly 15, right? But started working there and it was great because it was like a real restaurant. It wasn't like a fast food thing. So it was
Foxy's since it's renowned, you guys. Tell me about Foxy's. So
Foxy's was owned by this company, Macus, and legend has it that they had a restaurant called the Fox and Hound in Birmingham.
Yeah,
it was where Jimmy Hoffa disappeared.
Oh,
that's like that was the deal, right? And Great Oaks Mall was like this like highfalutin mall, I guess.
Very small boutique, little.
Yes.
Jacobson's was the department store.
You could get Jabot Jeans there is what I remember.
Yes, you could.
Like, Jabot Jeans. And then there was this kitchen store in there that was crazy. My mom was like a home cook. with like all the pots, and that's where she would go. So yeah, I got a job there, and it was great because I got to hang out with, like, that's when I decided that I wanted to be a pirate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what, like, cooks were
right.
to me then.
Totally.
Dish pit. Piracy.
Galley work, baby.
I remember the head dishwashers there. This dude, his name was Gary, had an afro. He was wild. He was probably like 40 years old. I thought he was 100, right? And he was like the dish bitch, right? But he was like Captain Dish, right? But he ran the kitchen, and he would throw pots and pans, and like I was terrified of him, but like at the same time, that's where I like got my work ethic, right? Because if I didn't scrub the dish outright, it was getting thrown back at me.
Wow.
Ooh, yeah.
And this is back when line cooks were, some of them were like coming from prison or OCJ, oh, mm-hmm. right? They might as well have been prison. You know what I'm saying? Like there's some of the things that I heard, I'll never forget. Yeah, and they'd be throwing hot pans at you, and you're catching them. And I'm 15, and I'm as big as I've ever been, right? So I'm 5'6", 100 pounds when I'm 15, okay? So I'm catching pots, pans, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm great that all of that happened in the 90s, because by the time Anthony Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential, came out, when I read it, it wasn't shocking to me. I was like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was seasoned by that time. I was like 22, 23 when that came out.
Wow.
Now,
wow.
I've already been in a professional kitchen for 8 years.
Seven. Yeah.
Right. I'm already now in my 40s. I'm like, should have got out there. Like, I was traumatized because restaurant trauma is real.
Okay? Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for real, for real. And so, yeah.
Listen, I'm going to put in an application at this place later today. And like, when I tell you the very specific feelings of dread of possibly being the new girl again and having to meet all your servers and then having to meet the kitchen, which we all know the kitchen is.
You get sized the fuck up.
You get sized up. You get sexually harassed with eyeballs. What have you, and just like until you're no longer the new girl, you just have to be that person for a bit.
Totally. And then, like, it all happens 45. In one night. You know what I mean? There's like one night that like changes it all, like within your first month,
right.
You
and,
know?
And playing small, like you're like, I've done all these cool things. I'm a stand-up comedian, but like you can't just come out of the gates being like big shit mm-hmm. and being like full personality. No. You have to be like a quiet turd who's learning.
Yeah.
And you just feel.
And that's what sucks about the industry right there. You said it right there. Plan small, you know what I mean? This whole hierarchy that goes on even today, in the restaurants, as much as they want to put the health and wellness and take care of that, it's all scam. It's not, it's happening on a very micro level, but the fear yes. is real in these places. I experienced it too, right? Like, so I get it.
You get it. So, go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, so if we're cutting two, right? We're 8 years mm-hmm. after, you started in a dish pit. I mean, had you gone to culinary school at that point? Like, when did that happen? Okay.
No. Okay. So, all right. So culinary school was like not a thing. I took like classes.
Gotcha.
I too never completed any.
Gotcha. Right.
Well, our chef friends all say culinary school is the biggest
totally
out there. So
I attempted on three different occasions and always had to work, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes like, so much sense. Like, yeah, I just wasn't sure if you went or not. Absolutely. And like, and most everything, it doesn't matter if you go to school or not, you don't learn a goddamn thing until you're like in right. the shit. You know what I mean? Well, so it's like,
I started getting certified for stuff later on. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Year eight by that time had already moved up, I guess, so to speak,
sure.
in the cooking world. So I was cooking online that worked at by this time, 8 years and then probably 10.
Yeah, like how many? Right? I was going to say like 10. Yeah, that's, right. That's pretty good.
So I'd already moved to Atlanta, moved back from Atlanta.
Okay.
Then I was like DJing. So I was going to be a DJ.
Of course.
Went to radio school. Right? I went to Specs Howard. You know, I'm
hell yeah.
See, my dream was never to be like a chef.
Right.
It was just be a DJ.
What you did radio DJ. When you're getting ready to do something else, which is what waiting tables is to so many people, right? Just working in the restaurant in general.
Yeah. Well, I say my whole like restaurant career is a scam. I never really like learned how to do anything. I just like watched people do movements. That's all it is movements.
Right.
Like I don't necessarily think I was ready to cook on the line, but I watched this dude from the dish tank do this task. And I just watched how he moved. I tell people even now, I don't give a shit about food. Food's the easy part. And it really is. The food's the easy part. How many different ways can you cook something? Medium rare, medium well. You can only cook it that way that time, right? It's about how you move and how that kitchen moves, right? Movement. Mm-hmm. So, I moved to Garmager Station, which is no salad station, right? And then you work your way to like back into the fryer. Then you're like saute pans. Then you get up to the, you know, flat top, grill, whatever, and then you're calling tickets, right? So at that point, you're getting paid. You're a chef, right? Mm-hmm. You're an executive chef when you have to do paperwork.
Right.
And that's it. Now, depending on how fine of dining that you're going, then there's technique, right? You're going to learn stuff in culinary school that definitely helps you when you get into that upper echelon of working and stuff. But, you know, but I'm going to say the scene in Rochester, mid-90s, even Atlanta, later 90s, wasn't like fine dining. It wasn't until I got to like California when I started seeing that stuff, right? And that's when I was like, oh, maybe I should check out like the American Culinary Federation, see what they're doing and get those hours in and do that work. Right. So, yeah.
Where
that was the first eight.
Where in California were you?
So I landed in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. But this
creepy.
Is
so, that so makes I'm sense skipping, with your skater background, man.
I'm skipping over like a whole lifetime of events, right? So, but I'll stick with the I'll stick with the culinary because I skipped over my like I did this like server bartender thing in the mean in between there, right?
Okay.
So I'll just say this. One thing about being back of the house and interacting with front of the house staff, wait staff, this, that, and the other thing, again, you learn how each other moves. That's the only way a restaurant works.
Oh, yeah.
So if I'm in the kitchen and I'm working, I'm watching servers 100% of the time because it's like, when am I going to put that plate up? And I'm just seeing how they come to the kitchen, how they leave the kitchen. If you're fortunate enough to work in an open kitchen, you can see how they interact on the thing. And then I'm from Rochester and I have a great speaking voice, right? So, okay, I can talk. I know the food, right? And I can speak English well. So when I move from a city to another city and I'm broke, I'm not going to go make $15 an hour as a cook. I'm like, I'm a server.
Yeah,
and I've been watching bartenders because by this time I'm a pretty accomplished drinker and I can do that. Oh, I'm a bartender. So because I want the cash, right?
Absolutely.
So when I got to Santa Cruz, I was like on cruise control with that. Then I decided to start learning about wines and things like that. So I wasn't cooking in two cities before I went back to the kitchen. So I was learning about wine and watching some really good chefs in Northern California for like 2 years before I decided that I was gonna like start practicing their movements in kitchens again when I got back to Michigan.
That's awesome. Yeah, did you happen to watch The Bear?
No, I refuse to watch it.
It's, well, I was just gonna say, it's like what you, one of the characters, right? Like what you kind of showed me was, you know, when you're working in a kitchen full of cooks, but then someone comes and shows up with culinary, you know, with their pressed white, their everything. And there's just this moment with one of the characters, Sid, where this whole kitchen that's been doing their dysfunction and doing just fine, she comes in and now is in charge and is teaching them technique. And they're so resistant. They're so pissed. They're making fun of everything she says. And it's just such an authentic moment because like every kitchen has its own way of doing good work. But yeah, then to have someone coming straight from school and then being like, we're going to, you know, julienne. And they're like, what? And then, yeah.
Right.
Like, they're getting really mad at all the yes chefs. And
I love it all. You know what I mean? It's just not what I started from, right?
Totally.
And so, and I'm always like, I've always been, we go back to like high school, right? Always being going against the grain. Mm-hmm. It was like, so when you get into that restaurant thing and when it was brought to my attention that culinary school could be a thing, I was like, what do you mean? I'm too busy. I'm working now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm a nerd, so I'm looking at the movement. So, you know, what, julienne, cool. Oh, that's what I've been doing this whole time. And I'm a nerd, so I remember that, right? So it's like that whole crash course. And I loved running into chefs that came from culinary school. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered other people that I worked with, I guess. That's right. And it was like, it was one of those things that made me want to like start getting certified. Because I got embarrassed sometimes when I was like, when I did work in a couple of kitchens where people, you know, the chefs might have been, they were throwing out terminology because they knew I didn't know, right? So,
big dogging.
Yeah, but like low key, like, will you grab the da da da?
Sure. I mean, come on, like, you know, reaching behind you.
Like, oh,
absolutely.
Yeah, I do know if you just said it, but you didn't just say it because you wanted to.
You wanted to make me ask, what is that? Right. You wanted, yeah.
Anyways, so
like all of this, right? So then you said 27 years in, you retired. And then once you were like, was part of your getting to retirement, then like, then I'm going to be my own boss and this is where the food truck comes in?
Oh, man. So, no. Okay, so a lot of life lessons happened, right? And I'll just say a part of my journey was that I knew that I wasn't going to be able to stay away from the kitchen. And as it relates to, like, touching people and connecting with people like on a street level, quite literally a street level, I knew that this would be a way for me to like do that. And then you have the rise of social media.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm going to go back to, I mean, how candid are we getting? All the way.
I mean, whatever you want to share. Okay. I mean, like, I just want to make sure too that like once we get to like, it's really interesting to me the steps we have to take to even make a food truck happen, but go back, man. You're good.
So okay, so I'll go back to the pandemic. So right before the pandemic, I was working. I had helped open up a restaurant downtown Detroit, called the Elephant Room. Check it out. It's still there, and it was really cool. It was one of the first times, you know, I had like free reign over to how the kitchen looked and, you know, how the flow and the movements in the kitchen would be. And I just thought it was great. And then I was working at a place in Hazel Park called Joe Bar, and they have a kitchen that kind of runs like simultaneously called Frame. which features a lot of local chefs in different restaurants, and they come and do kind of like a weekend deal,
a little pop-up
there. And I thought it was great. It was a really cool concept, and I liked it a lot, especially being able to interact with different chefs with different cuisines, seeing how they worked, and everybody was rad, right? Like that's like a chef's dream, right? Just working with a bunch of different guys. And then all of a sudden,
I don't know what's coming.
And then the pandemic just happened. Everyone was like, you know what I mean? And I just remember being at home and saying to my girlfriend at the time, I wonder like how everybody's like feeding themselves. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things, like nobody, there was like no movement. And I'd be like, it'd be really cool to like have a food truck right now. And that was like the seed that I guess was planted in my head that like when the shit hits the fan, have a food truck.
You are not alone. That was at one point when we were still getting those nice stimmy checks, my boyfriend at the time too, and we were like launching food truck concept. And then of course it fizzled out the minute I got, you know, right. We both kind of got to get back to work, but I still dance around it a lot. So yes, because you're just like, you can't shut this down.
Right. So, okay. So that's my thing, right? I'm like, oh man, if I had a food truck right now and we could figure out the safety thing, right? That's, you know what I mean? Like there was still kind of, nobody knew what to do. It was like 6 feet. Okay. And there was some restaurants, definitely, especially like mom and pops that were open through the pandemic that never shut down. Mm-hmm. And okay, so then take it a step further. So now we're watching Netflix all the time, and social media actually for me took off then because I was watching DJ D Nice. Like D Nice was like doing these club quarantine things, and people are doing Zoom, and I'm like, somehow am I. My brain, while all these content creators are literally being born in your face, people are making bread. You know what I mean? And I'm like watching all this, and I'm like somebody that's been used to cooking, and I'm like not cooking, and I'm in my mind like, if I had a way to access to a kitchen, and if, and another thing, if Michigan was as progressive as like say in New York or in LA, I would have been out on the corner selling food because I know it didn't stop there. You know what I mean? Like they were still out doing their thing outside of the, like go down to Poppy's and he's serving you whatever outside of the, out of his window. In LA, they were still on the street. Michigan's so conservative and weird. It's like, oh no, please don't step outside your apartment.
Through a window. You're like, oh, what do you think a drive-thru is?
God. You know what I mean? Like, for real. Like, it was like that. So, I don't know. I just kept the idea in my head, and I just knew there was, like, a link. And it was going to be through social media. It was going to be a lot of people that quit their job or never went back to their job. And food trucks blew up. Social media blew up. But there's yet for me to be like something that brings those things together. And that's what led me to retire from the food business. I retired from the bottom line, right?
Right.
Like the bottom line of pretty much everything in this country, and God bless it, is money. So I had to take myself out of that equation and figure out, do I actually like to cook? Because will I do it for free, right?
Right, while I get started. Yeah, exactly.
Like, will I do this for free? And then, so I will do it for free because it's an action that I've been performing for so long. I need it or I'm going to be depressed because that's real too. But I also love the idea of connecting with people through the, like what we're doing right now. Right. This is amazing. So how do I do that? And I just sat and watched, and it kind of blew itself up in my face. You have people that create content that are make that started out making the bread. Now they're cooking food. Now this content creator has 22,000, 100,000 followers making food in his house. How do I eat it?
Right, right.
How do I eat that? No. Like, I'm liking it. I'm going through my likes. Right. I'm like,
but I want it. Like, yeah.
This guy. I'm subscribing to this Patreon. Oh, this person's on fire. Gotta catch them make this thing that I can't eat. I'm like, I'm gonna start building food trucks. And then I'm gonna like jump on a call with these chefs and be like, hey, I want to sell your food on this food truck in Michigan. Detroit. No. And they're like, what? I'm like, how do we do that? I'm like, it's gonna have to be on good faith, man. Like, I could just like take your recipe and do it, but I don't want to cook. You got the followers, I got the truck, people want to eat your food, right? Like, so that's the business part of me. But if I take the money out of it, then they're just benefiting from being able to actually feed somebody in a different area. So that's where I'm at with the business part of it. Okay. Because I felt like it would be a fun project in retirement to connect a bunch of social media chefs and, you know, chefs that necessarily can't leave the construct of what they're doing in their restaurant and want to test out some recipes and like actually touch people, because people are very much still into the idea of just like pulling up, right? Like, I'm gonna pull up, you know what I mean? There's a lot of that, and it just sounds more fun than being in a restaurant at 8 a.m. and then starting your day at 5, you know. For me, at this point, at 45, turning 46, Anthony Bourdain said this on an episode, and this is just me. Is that it? There's nothing sadder than a 45-year-old line cook. I, at that time, was 42, and I was just like, he's right. but that's my journey, right? So it's like, I'm not here to knock anybody else. It's like, but for me, I was like, I'm out, like, and I want to give back more than I take, right?
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.